Brittle Diamonds, Chapter 25. Miss Davidson Has a Past. Saturday after Easter. Catherine showed Tracy up to the spare bedroom. The heavily pregnant girl had trouble negotiating the steep stairs made for the smaller feet of yesteryear and clung to the handrail for support. "Sorry everything's so narrow," Catherine called back to her friend, "but we're nearly there." At the end of a short landing, she ushered Tracy into an inviting room with bright blue and yellow curtains round the little leaded windows and a matching duvet on the antique bed. A pastel yellow Chinese rug lay on lacquered floorboards, beyond which an open door revealed the ensuite bathroom. "Come on, Tracy, let's see what we can find to wash and scrub you with." "Come in," said her friend, panting from the effort of climbing. "Just stay there, on the bed. I'll find some stuff." Catherine disappeared into the adjoining room and rummaged in the drawers and cupboards for a few minutes. "Here we are," she called. "I've got a travel toothbrush and toothpaste I've never used, and the soap and flannel are brand new. Let's see, we've got towels and a dressing gown I bought at a hotel I audited in Birmingham. Now I'll go and find something fetching for you to sleep in." She popped her head round the corner and asked, "While I'm here, why don't I run you a bath?"
"Sounds perfect," Tracy answered gratefully.
"Good. What you need is a long soak in hot water before supper. You also need a stiff gin and tonic, but you're not allowed, so I'll bring you up some chamomile tea. That'll help you sleep tonight." Catherine busied herself in the kitchen while her friend sat upstairs in the bathtub, a steaming mug of chamomile tea next to her. She hunted down nutritious food for a mother-to-be. The closest she found to it was cauliflower. She'd make a cheese sauce, potatoes, which she'd boil in their skins and smother in melted butter. She'd bought a pre-roasted chicken for a hasty after-work meal, which she could heat up quickly. She hoped the menu was edible and had just finished preparing it when Tracy poked her head round the corner, hair wrapped in a towel, turban style. Under the white hotel gown, she wore a knee-length T-shirt of Catherine's. Written under several drawings of show jumps were the words, "Been there, jumped that." "Hi," Catherine greeted. "Good timing. Take a pew."
"I love your cottage, Catherine. This is all so homey. The food looks terrific."
She sat down at the pine table as Catherine served. "Since my conscience won't allow you any alcohol, how about some more tea or a non-alcoholic beer, maybe?" Catherine asked, as she placed plates of steaming food before Tracy in her own place setting.
"Couldn't I have just a teeny weeny bit of alcohol?" Tracy asked in a sad voice.
She put her right forefinger and thumb close together to indicate just how teeny weeny.
"I mean, it's only supposed to be a real problem when you're in the first 3 months. The babies are out of danger now."
"If anything went wrong with the twins and you drank as much alcohol as I can understand you'd like, we'd both feel terrible, Tracy." Catherine opened the fridge door and produced two bottles. "Look, this non-alcoholic beer tastes pretty much like the real thing. Try it. I'll join you." She poured it into two glass mugs and gave one to her friend. Tracy took the pseudo beer and sighed.
"This baby business is tough. Okay, I'll give it a go."
"Cheers then." Catherine sat down and raised her glass. "Tuck in while the food's still hot." She began eating, but Tracy merely stared at her plate. "Poor thing," Catherine thought. "It's been a very rough day on top of many rough days." "Hey, eat up. We've got all night to devise a master plan for you and your babies, and you need brain food to do your bit of the thinking." The redhead looked at her dejectedly.
"Don't you ever get depressed? You're always so cheerful. Don't anything go wrong in your life? Don't you sometimes want to end it all?"
Catherine hesitated. When she spoke again, her voice sounded quiet and small. "Yes, I have had those moments. I think everyone does at some point in their lives."
"I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. I didn't mean to pry. I suppose I'm just a bit jealous of you because you seem so happy all the time."
"It's okay. In fact, it's a good thing you brought it up. Maybe my story can help you." Tracy leaned forward, eyebrows raised.
"Would you tell me what happened?"
"Sure. But while I talk, you have to promise me to eat. Remember, we need to put our heads together tonight, big time." Her guest made a huge show of gathering up her eating utensils and taking a large bite of chicken,
Mmm, she muttered in genuine appreciation, then waved her fork in Catherine's direction. Okay, okay, I'm eating. Let's hear it. Once upon a time, Catherine began, and Tracy laughed. There was a good Catholic girl who fell in love with a good Catholic boy. When was once upon a time? Tracy chimed in. Let me think. I first met him 3 years ago. Was it love at first sight? No, I thought he was a total jerk, actually. But he kept asking me out until one day I said yes. Why'd you do that? So I could go out with him and show him how totally incompatible we were. And were you? Tracy's right hand was poised in mid-air with a forkful of potato. Catherine laughed at the memory. No. What did you do? Dinner and a movie? Tracy was now eating with a healthy appetite. No, he'd done his research and knew I loved horses, so he took me to the show jumping at the county fair. He'd packed a picnic and pretended to be interested in the horses, asking intelligent questions about what was going on. Wow, he must have been keen. Catherine's face clouded over. Yes, he was. She took a bite of food and drank some beer before continuing. Well, what happened? Tracy asked impatiently. I discovered he wasn't a jerk after all. We became inseparable. His big interest was music. He was a brilliant pianist. How romantic! Did he play for you? What kind of music? Yes to the first question and classical to the second. Yuck! Tracy made a face. Not at all. I love it, now. My parents listened to classical music all the time and I hated it. As a child I took piano lessons and that was all I was allowed to play. But when I met Mark, I was glad of it. I could appreciate his talent and show some knowledge of what he loved so much. Catherine looked past Tracy into the middle distance. Those were the days. And? Tracy prompted her. And we fell in love. And? Catherine laughed. And yes, we got engaged. And? It's hard for me to say this. Catherine put down her knife and fork. Just spit it out, came the helpful prob from across the table. Didn't he show up at the church? He did, but we didn't get married. What happened? Catherine swallowed hard. There was a girl there, a pretty girl whom I didn't know, at the back of the church. She was holding a baby and she shouted out that he was the father. Yes, at the part when, you know, they ask if there's any reason why these two people should not be joined in marriage. Catherine couldn't speak and meekly nodded her head. But I thought you Catholics weren't supposed to, you know, do it before you got married. Her friend laughed bitterly. Well, apparently he did, and not with me, but with some other girl. Catherine, how awful! It was. Catherine's throat choked at the memory of that humiliating day. She swallowed hard. So you see, I've also wanted to end it all. Believe me, I've really wanted to end it all. I'm so sorry. That's way worse than what I'm going through. No, and that's not why I told you, Tracy. I just want you to know it is possible to pick up the pieces and carry on and, yes, be happy again. How on earth could you ever be happy again? Well, you can imagine how I felt about God at that point. Here was a Catholic man abandoning me at the altar. I was through with the Catholic faith, I can tell you. But did you see Mark again? Did he ever tell you why he did it? No, he worked for a rival accounting firm in London. He didn't answer my calls to his house, and when I rang his work number, I was told he'd transferred to another office, and they wouldn't tell me where. So there's been no closure, as the shrinks call it. That's made it even tougher to deal with. So how did you deal with it? How do you deal with it now? At first, I put it down to something being wrong with me. You know how that goes. Well, maybe you don't. There's this thing about Catholics. We feel guilty about everything. So I assumed it was my fault that Mark, well, did what he did. But after a while, I realised I couldn't spend my whole life thinking I was defective, that I wore the stigma of not wanted, and no one would love me again. It was such a futile, heavy burden to carry. Then something good finally happened to turn my life around. Ruby, Tracy guessed. Yup, Ruby. When Liz offered her to me, she was throwing me a lifeline. I think she knew that. With Ruby, I had a legitimate reason to leave London and start over again. A horse forces you to go out and look after it and gives so much in return. When I'm riding, I have to concentrate on what I'm doing. I don't have time to dwell on the past or worry about the future. It's just me and my mare.
Sounds great. I wish I weren't so afraid of horses, otherwise I'd try riding, after the twins are born, of course.
You should. Inwardly, Catherine rejoiced, so she stopped thinking about abortion or suicide then.
Ruby's a sweetheart. Tomorrow you can come and see her, and you'll begin to understand what I mean.
Tracy looked doubtful. Then after a pause, asked,
So why were you in church last Sunday then? I thought you said you'd given up on Catholicism.
I got press ganged by the Oldings. They had me over for lunch on Good Friday and wanted me to experience what a good priest Father Peter is firsthand. And they felt he needed support after his friend Father Joseph died. You remember he impressed me at the Pendletons' party, and if I'm honest, I was rather curious to see him in action. Of course, none of us knew what was going to happen.
Tracy's face fell.
No, she said unhappily.
Oh, Flip, I've brought us back to the taboo subject, haven't I?
We had to come back to it sometime, her friend replied.
Yes, I suppose we did. Catherine gathered up both their plates and took them to the sink. Another beer? She asked. And Tracy nodded.
I've got strawberry cheesecake for dessert. Will you have some?
Sure, thanks.
Catherine busied herself with the next course, and Tracy removed the turban to ruffle her wet locks with a towel.
So what kind of happy ending is in sight for me, then?
Catherine placed the food and drink in front of Tracy and took some to her side of the table.
I need to think, we both do, but there is a happy ending. You just have to believe it.
She sat down with her spoon and fork.
First, we have to examine the facts, she said solemnly.
What do you mean? Tracy looked puzzled. We know the facts.
Let's look at them from a different angle. Catherine looked over at her bemused friend. Let's look at Father Joseph.
Okay, Tracy said dubiously. Why, though?
Because he was a man who committed crimes against teenagers. It's not proven, but his suicide points to his guilt. Agreed?
Agreed.
So he could have expected to be ostracized by the community if he'd lived.
What's that mean?
It means kicked out of the community, ignored, sent to Coventry.
Like I'm gonna be?
Ha, that's precisely my point.
Father Joseph had committed a crime. You haven't. There's no reason for you to be shunned by the villagers.
How do you reckon that? They've just found out that not only is my uncle his accuser, but in their minds, I deliberately went behind Father Peter's back and became the surrogate mother of his sister's children. They'll assume I knew it's against Catholic teaching, even though I didn't. My family has ruined that poor man's life. How are the villagers not going to hold it against me?
If Father Peter is the kind of man I think he is, he's not going to hold it against you.
But the villagers will, Tracy interrupted.
No, that's my point. If Father Peter shows them the way, they'll follow suit.
Catherine, that's a very sweet idea, but you haven't been in this village long enough to know what these people are like.
Catherine felt exasperated at Tracy's determination to see the worst side, but had to admit she was more likely to understand the Brotherton mentality than a Londoner like herself. She had to come up with a better argument, and took a large mouthful of cheesecake to give herself time.
See, even you can't think of anything, Tracy wailed.
Well, you know one villager besides me who isn't against you.
Who's that?
Dodo, that's who. And I think she has way more influence on the villagers than the likes of Florence Pendleton, don't you?
Yes, I suppose you're right there.
She'll rally the villagers on your side, so try not to worry about what people think of you right now.
Catherine, I have to worry about it. My shop depends on those people.
Okay, but when you went into this deal, did you calculate how long the money would last you if the ban came into effect and your hunt sales dropped drastically?
Yes, about 6 months.
That's not a long time, but it's a decent amount of time.
Till what? Till I go bankrupt?
Again, Catherine wanted to shake her friend for her pessimism. But the girl was pregnant, which didn't help her grey matter or her emotional state, and she certainly was in a difficult situation.
No, till the villagers get over this whole business.
I wish I could see how that's going to happen.
Unlike Father Joseph, Father Peter hasn't committed suicide, so maybe he is innocent. When the villagers understand that and see how Father Peter is not blaming you for what you've done, the whole thing will blow over. You'll actually become a more interesting person to them too. A celebrity in Brotherton, from being related to Frank Nonnock and carrying surrogate twins. People will start flocking to your shop more than before. In fact, I can see people coming in from further afield as soon as the news of your surrogacy leaks out. You won't have to worry about the locals for a long while.
Tracy threw back her head and laughed. Catherine, you're unbelievable. You should become someone's spin doctor, really, you should.
But you know what people are like. It could well turn out that way.
I so hope you're right. It's definitely fun to imagine it all happening as you say.
Catherine's tone became more serious. So, in the meantime, you have to take care of yourself and the babies.
But what do I say to people who give me a hard time about all this until the wonderful events you describe happen?
You simply tell them the truth, that you didn't know the parents for Father Peter's relatives, and if they don't believe you, tell them to go and ask him themselves.
You do think he's innocent, though, don't you? You didn't sound so sure before.
It was a fair question.
My gut feelings tell me he is a decent man, Tracy. That's all I can base my answer on.
Well, that's how I feel about him, too.
Would you feel comfortable talking to him now?
Yes. Tracy paused. Are you going to church tomorrow? I mean, now that Father Peter won't be there?
Well, I must admit I've been wondering what attendance will be like. Either no one will go, or tons of people will show up out of curiosity.
It's hard to believe God lets such awful things happen, isn't it?
Yes. Tracy went to bed more cheerful, and Catherine was glad there'd be no more talk of abortion. She still didn't know where the redhead stood on keeping the twins or giving them to their contracted parents, but if Tracy were willing to talk again to Father Peter, he was the man to help her make the right decision. With Tracy's frame of mind improved and knowing Frank Nonnock could not bother his niece tonight, Catherine found her mind drifting to the early part of their conversation that night. She'd easily persuaded Tracy that acquiring Ruby was the cure for the hurt Mark had caused her. Yet the truth was, her horse gave her something to do and something to care for, but emotionally she was in limbo. Ruby only just saved her from spiralling into depression, and she could not call herself happy. She made a cup of hot cocoa and stared at it on the kitchen table, thinking back, as so often during the past year, on the day which should have been the happiest of her life. She often wondered how she would feel about Mark now if she saw him again. The answer varied, depending on her mood. Some days she'd love to slap him hard in the face and walk away. On others, she'd at least find out why he humiliated her before whacking him. But the truth was, she couldn't imagine wanting to be close to any other man. What they'd had was special. Sometimes she accused herself of not even wanting to find out if she were capable of being in another fulfilling relationship. And those were the days she understood that she still carried a torch for Mark. Those were her honest days. If she carried on like this, she would spend the rest of her life alone.